Welcome to Software Gone Wild, the first episode we are recording after the summer break. Some people on this show have been enjoying a month-long vacation on a boat, so let's start with them. Elisa, how are you doing?
Hi, Ivan. I'm good. Thank you.
For the three listeners that haven't heard about you before, what are you doing these days when you're not sailing?
I'm mostly sailing. I spent my summer on a very long vacation, which was great. And other than that, I'm writing software for networks.
Oh, so your freelance company has picked up?
Yes, I'm doing various jobs here and there, you know, too many at the same time and not enough if there's nothing. But I think that's a common theme.
I know how that feels. So if anyone wants to hire you because they have a network automation job, how can they find you?
They can check out my website, bigwaveit.org.
Perfect. The next one on this show, David G., lately from Brocade, right?
Yep, made the move. I'm now on the dark side.
You joined the dark side.
Indeed, I did.
What happened to your blog, by the way? You're not blogging anymore.
There's a hell of a lot of excuses there, so I'll start top down and work my way down. So bought a new house, got engaged, had a new job, been on vacation, and more things like that. So there are blog posts in the works, but right now I'm trying to stay alive, eat, drink, and that kind of stuff. You know, the simple things in life.
So congratulations, congratulations, congratulations.
So, Ivan, yourself, so you've been away climbing and sunning it and, you know, Saint-Tropez and all these kind of places?
Oh, yeah, sure. No, we are always going to this same creation island.
Okay.
Living like 3 kilometers out of a small village. Everyone in the village already knows us. And we know what's waiting for us there. And the kids love the place, so we keep coming back. This time, I took my mountain bike with me. So we were biking around in that crazy heat. It was 30 plus degrees Celsius.
Wow.
Yeah. And now for the star of the show, David Barroso. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I don't think I have had that much fun as you guys during this summer, but I had plenty of fun as well.
You're still at Spotify?
Yeah, I'm still at Spotify.
So the last time we were talking, I was in Stockholm, I think, in October or something, and it was dark and gloomy. And you had this great idea of turning an Arista switch into an internet edge router. And we talked about that in episode 19 of Software Gone Wild. So was there any progress on this idea?
Yeah, there has been a lot of progress there, a lot of changes, a lot of going back and forth, testing, and now we are finally in production.
Wow.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride.
So where shall we start? With the ride or with the production experience?
No, I think we should start by the ride.
Okay.
Let's leave the good news for the end.
Okay. So how was the ride?
Well, if you remember the original idea of this kind of SDN internet router was to actually replace the traditional routers that were kind of expensive and, well, consuming a lot of power and requiring a lot of space in the data center with just a switch, which is kind of cheap, small, and consumes a lot of less power. So that was kind of the original idea. I built this prototype when we recorded the last podcast to prove that could be done, and that kind of more or less went fine. It was good enough to actually prove the point. But that version of the SDN internet router, or SER as I call it for abbreviation, was kind of hard to develop, hard to maintain, hard to expand. So I kind of rewrote that to add like some sort of plugin system. That plugin system allowed me to do more stuff with SER, like gathering data, building some graphs to see how it was performing, how much traffic I was matching with the top end prefixes, but still was hard to develop and hard to maintain. So I decided to refactor yet again the code. And then I started working on what the SDN router is today, which is it's way, way simpler. It's way more interesting, I think. And it's super easy to extend. It's super easy to troubleshoot, to deploy. I mean, I think that has been a lot of improvements in terms of the SDN internet router itself. And in parallel, there has been a lot of testing with actual hardware. Before it was just, everything was being kind of tested in a VM, verifying that the premise was actually true. Like, we can do this with a correlating BGP and flow information. So we started doing some testing with hardware, and that led to a lot of other interesting issues. I don't know if you want to go with all the issues we found working with actual hardware.
Oh, sure.
When I decided that I wanted to do this, I went with Arista. The solution is supposed to be vendor agnostic. I know actually people that is trying there with Juniper equipment and with Cumulus. I don't know where they are exactly, but the solution is supposed to be vendor agnostic. But I decided to go with Arista for several reasons. The main reason is that I had a really good relation with their engineers. And I really valued that because I was trying to do something new. So I kind of wanted to have some backup in terms of how hardware works, how to do stuff in their operating system. Because another thing I wanted to do was to deploy SER inside the switch. This is aiming like small deployments, like a small pop somewhere in I don't know, where I don't have a data center. So the idea was to ship there as few boxes as I could. So if I can deploy everything inside the same switch, that's better than deploying a switch and a server to run kind of the BGP controller, as you want to call it, sir. So the reason why I chose Arista was that one, that I had a good relation with the Arista engineers. I could run code inside the Arista switch. At the end, Arista is just running on Linux. So if you can run it on Linux, you can run it inside iOS. And the third one was because they have these one rack unit switches that they have 100 gig interfaces, and Arista is the only vendor that has that kind of form factor. So that was really interesting for me as well.
So when you say this is vendor agnostic, if a vendor would not have the capability of running that within their own Linux, you would run it on an external server and then talk to the router, or?
Yeah, exactly. The only thing that SER requires is some sort of flow exporter, like S-Flow, NetFlow, IPFix, whatever, and BGP. So if your switch or router supports that, you just can run the code in a Linux box. The only difference is that with Arista and with Cumulus, you can actually run the code inside the same switch. I mean, the footprint of SER is really, really, really small, so you don't really need a server to run it. But if your device doesn't support that, you can still run it on a separate server. And actually, I can elaborate a bit more on that, but we are using SER as well with traditional routers that we have in the data center. The data center we have, because of historical reasons, some Cisco ASRs, and we are still using SER with those for other use cases that I can elaborate later on.
Okay, so just like a regular PM account setup.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, SER is using as backend PM account. So that, I mean, if your device can be connected to PM account, it can run SER because that's more or less the only requirements.
Very cool.
So a shameless plug. We covered PM account and the way Elisa was using PM account at Netflix in two previous podcasts. So go and listen to them if you don't understand what we are talking about.
Yeah, and you should definitely do that. I mean, PM account is very useful software for your data center or your network in general. You can get
Beware of the evil octopus.
Yeah.
By the way, if I remember correctly, you collect all the BGP information in your BGP daemon, and then you only install the relevant information into the forwarding table, right?
Yeah, but yeah, maybe, I mean, we are kind of derailing a bit.
Okay.
Let me go first through the challenges with actual hardware, and then we can maybe elaborate a bit more on SER, because SER has changed a bit the scope of what it was before to what it is right now. So if we go just one step back.
Okay.
We keep talking about using a switch as an internet edge router. As I mentioned before, I was using Arista for several reasons, but in order to test Arista's internet edge router, I built another tool that I called Super Smash Bro GP. That was kind of like an internal joke in the team. And that tool would simulate different BGP peers and start sending hundreds of thousands of BGP prefixes to the Arista box. And that would have like a lot of different BGP attributes, like a lot of different layers, paths, communities, next hops. The idea was just to stress as much as possible the BGP implementation of Arista just to test how it would perform. And well, I mean, you know that Arista is more or less focused in the data centers. You can imagine how that ended. It didn't end well. I don't know how many horrible ways I killed the box with that tool. I mean, yeah, we found a lot of memory leaks because I don't know exactly the reason, but I mean, we found memory leaks, the box running out of memory, a lot of different issues. Another issue we found is that, as kind of you were pointing out before, Ivan, the idea is of SER is kind of to use the selective route download to choose what you have in the RIP to install it in the FIB. So you can kind of choose the prefixes that are only relevant for your network instead of having the full routing table. So another challenge was kind of how to tell the box what are the prefixes that you want. I was using route maps, which kind of led to using prefix lists to say these are the prefixes that I want. And I was being able to install, thanks to some optimizations in the Arista hardware, around 200K prefixes. So try to install a prefix list with 200K entries and then tell me how well do you think that's going to go.
Can they even save that configuration afterwards?
Well, we had some issues at the beginning, like installing that prefix list would take between 5 and 10 minutes.
Oh.
You could save it, but the real trick was kind of to install the original prefix list. So that was actually something fun to fix. But in any case, I mean, after testing and identifying more or less all the issues, they worked on that, and now their BGP implementation is just really, really fast and efficient. We don't have any memory leaks right now. We don't have any kind of issues. BGP seems to be really, really fast processing all the inputs that they get. And even the memory footprint of the BGP process now is way, way smaller, like 1/4 of what it used to be. So we kind of fixed the BGP process. Now it doesn't break when I stress it with my tool. And they also fix how they install prefixly. So now from 5 to 10 minutes, it just takes like 3 to 5 seconds instead.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that was an incredible improvement. The only issue is that I don't know if you're familiar with the config session feature, but that kind of breaks when you have a prefix list so big in the configuration. We are also working on fixing that, but that's still not fixed, to be honest. But still, we are working on that, and I have full confidence in that will be fixed.
So config session is their way of commit/rollback, right?
Yeah, correct. That breaks with this prefix list. They have some sort of safety to avoid breaking stuff. So when the config session requires certain amount of memory, they don't allow you to kind of do a diff, for example, between the running config and the candidate config. So that breaks, because with the prefix list, the amount of memory that requires goes above that kind of safe limit.
The diff is too big.
Yeah, I don't know if the diff is too big or what they have to compute, they assume is too big, so they prefer to abort. I'm not sure about it, but it's the diff what it breaks, actually, just doing this diff.
By the way, you said that you could install around 200,000 routes in a data center switch.
Yeah, that was actually cool.
I thought that the layer 3 tables in data center switches are way smaller than that.
Yeah, that's actually a clever trick that they do. I think that there is some Netflix presentation about that. I kind of remember that. But what Arista is doing is they're using the MAC address table to, I mean, you know that usually in the MAC address table, you can also install /32s.
Mm-hmm.
So what they are doing is partitioning that table and saying, okay, in this part of the table, we are going to install /24s. So they don't have to store the prefix, the prefix length there. They just install the prefix because they know that it's going to be always /24. So with that improvement, you can go to 200K/24s, I mean 200,000/24, and around 20,000 non/24 prefixes. So you go around 220,000 prefixes in total.
So they are reusing the hash table that's usually used to look up the IP next hops and the MAC addresses, and they just put /24s in them.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, that table is huge and it's mostly unused, especially in an edge router where you don't have that many layer 2 adjacencies and stuff like that. So why not?
You probably have like 10 MAC addresses on that router, right?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe 15, but no more than that.
Cool.
Yeah, so this is more or less what we have been doing in terms of hardware for the last almost a year now. And if we go again to Sir, as you remember, Sir was kind of this idea of correlating BGP information with flow information to try to figure out what were the prefixes that I needed in my routing table to get to the users of my network. So instead of installing the full routing table, I would just install what I really need. That was the original idea. With the last refactoring of the code, what I did instead was to build like a sort of routing agent, to call it somehow. Now the only thing that Sir is doing is actually gathering data from PMAC, doing some analytics, and present the data, the results of these analytics via an API to you or to an application that you're writing. So that means that you can just gather this data and use it for any purpose that you want. One use case is this FIP optimization. I wrote a small script that would use SER API to download the top-n prefixes and then generate the prefix list that I need on my Arista switch and install the prefix list. I have another, as I mentioned to Elisa briefly, I also have in the data center some Cisco ASRs connected to transit networks. And in that particular case, we are using SER as well. But in this case, the only thing we are doing is gather data. And a colleague, for example, wrote a small script that would connect to SER. It would say, okay, give me the top 10 ASs that I'm sending data to. And then when it would query PMDB these ASs, like, okay, for this AS, it has an open policy. Yes, then we're going to send an email and see if we can peer with them.
Ah, so you are trying to optimize your peering relationships based on the data that you're collecting.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we are running SER as well with the Cisco ASR, because we can collect data and we can do useful stuff with that data, like just try to contact those networks and see if they want to peer with us.
So that means that SER is now becoming more like a wrapper around PMHTT, right?
Yeah, kind of. It's just getting data from PMHTT and doing some analytics. I mean, it's really small what it does actually, but it's just presenting that data via that API so you can do whatever you want.
Analytics and anything peering analysis, I guess, is the first reason that people usually look towards anything as flow, net flow type analysis things to, you know, renegotiate their relationships or reestablish their relationships in whatever form they have them.
Yeah, I mean, SER is presenting like stuff like, I mean, you can query SER and ask if a particular AS is in that particular router, or if a destination network is in that particular router, or what are the top ASs in your network, or the top destination prefixes in the network, or you can also get the raw flow data or the entire BGP table, for example. So you can get a lot of data from it and do stuff, anything that you want.
Do you need to query every device separately, or do you have some form of centralized server that collects things, and then you can use that to you know, just ask questions.
Yeah, that's a good question. My idea is that Serge should be completely standalone, meaning that each one should work on its own, take its own decisions, and present its own data. But it has an API. So there is, we are also thinking about building kind of like a master controller that would use that API to centralize information and take like global decisions. I could be peering, for example, with the same network in different pops. So I could try to choose the one that is cheaper for me to send users to. Like, I have this network in D6. I have it as well in AM6, but I don't know. I have more capacity in AM6. So let's just send the user to AM6 instead.
Yeah, because a lot of that information only really makes sense in comparison with, I don't know, other regions or other pops or that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, Serre is completely standalone. I mean, it's supposed to work independently. So, I mean, I don't like this kind of centralizing everything, at least to take routing decisions, because you don't want anything to break because you lost your kind of master controller. But that's still the master controller, what it would influence is kind of the CDN, kind of, not really the routing decision. I mean, routing wise, nothing is going to change. It's just where I send users to. And that's kind of more like an application logic decision, not really a routing decision. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Sounds good.
So, David, can I derail this a little bit? When are you going to use a data center switch for, say, peering? I assume initially, if you stand up a BGP session, you can only accept so many prefixes within the limitations of the data center switch anyway. And then you could use Sir to kind of optimize those. So what I'm trying to get in my head is when you, let's say, take one of these switches to an IX, for instance, where's the starting point? Because you can't accept, you know, every prefix from every peer. So do you initially stand up, say you have a default route going one way and you accept so many prefixes of another, and you figure out where your users are coming from and then try and optimize from the ground up as opposed to reduce and optimize from the top down so you don't overwhelm the box?
Usually you deploy, like, you will probably deploy this in a new deployment. So you would start off by like maybe peering with one or two networks only. And at that time, you can just enable Serve, but without doing any FIP optimization. You're literally installing everything. At that point, maybe you have like maybe 1,000 or 2,000 prefixes. You don't have that many. So it's when you are reaching kind of the limit when you actually start the FIP optimization. But saying that, you need like a default exit, because when you have enabled the FIP optimization, there is a period of time when you enable a new peer that you still don't know that the networks for that peer are relevant for your network. So everything going to that particular network will go over the default.
Sure. Yeah. It makes perfect sense. So in my head, I was kind of seeing that if you take a, let's say, an older router with not much kind of TCAM space, let's say space on board, for prefixes, where the prefixes will get kind of cycled out randomly as it kind of took new ones on. This way, you really have kind of selective discard of prefixes. It's kind of cool, and I think a really interesting use case.
Yeah, something that is really interesting to see is that, for example, I have data for links here in front of me, and we are peering in links, for example, and we are getting around 150K prefixes in total there, but using historical data for a week, we are only using 15,000 prefixes. And of those 15,000 prefixes, 6,000 account for 99.9% of my traffic.
Wow.
is that like that in all the locations you have installed so far? How do the locations compare to each other?
So far, I have seen similar results everywhere. Actually, London is our biggest location. And my guess is that as we deploy new and more locations, I mean, these numbers will kind of shrink, because I mean, as I can spread my users across different sites, I will have less networks in each site.
Yeah, but the ratio should be, I'm thinking the ratio should be kind of similar.
Yeah, probably.
So to take a slightly larger view, what you're saying is that for anyone who has deployed around numerous locations worldwide, they actually don't need full routing at any location.
I don't think so. I mean, I would like to see other people kind of doing this analytics, but I would be surprised if they're using more than, I don't know, 10% of the routing table.
So deploying high-end internet edge routers at those locations is just a waste of money.
Yeah, that's what I think at least.
Interesting. So to follow on this one then, I mean, you could really create a reacted fib, couldn't you? So even if you, say, started receiving an increased amount of traffic from another prefix, you could actually program a forwarding entry, then remove it, maybe if it was a trend or, you know, if it was a marketing thing that had gone viral. So therefore, you know, you could still adapt to changing traffic patterns without having to ever kind of just upgrade because you need to, you know, deliver traffic to a new prefix that's come online. It's a really interesting use case.
Mm.
By the way, one minor detail that we skipped over previously, I think. In the initial implementation, you were running BERT on the Arista switch, right?
Hmm. Yeah, correct. Yeah, this is what I was talking before. I started testing with their own BGP implementation, with Arista's BGP implementation, because it was easier to deploy than having to replace the BGP process with BERT. And that's where I started breaking stuff. But now everything is kind of fixed. This has been working for almost a month now, and no surprises. The only thing that is broken is, as I mentioned before, the config session, but BGP is working fine. Memory is perfectly fine. CPU is fine. We haven't found any surprise so far. So we are right now using the BGP implementation of Arista. The only thing is that I'm using a EFT image. I'm not using an official release, mainly because it's not released yet. I'm using like a beta image.
Ah, so you're running on a Spotify image?
No. It's not a Spotify image. It's a beta image. I mean, when the image is published, I will use the official one.
Okay. Yeah, we used to have the same one. That if you ask for it and you need the feature, you would typically get the one that is not officially released yet.
I don't think I have used a generally available image from Arista yet. I'm always running on EFT images, but that's just, they call it field test images, I think. It's just the beta.
Early field trials, something.
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember. But it's not like a custom built image. It's just.
That's what you get. That's what you get when you live on the edge.
Yeah.
And then you either fall off or you get cut, right?
Yeah. No, but I mean, Arista is really good testing code. So I'm not scared of running a beta image. Obviously, you have to run your test as well. But so far, the images that they have said, you can use this in production, although it's still an EFT. So far, they have worked perfectly fine.
The other detail that I'm still wondering about. So you said if you deploy this architecture at a new POP, you will slowly build the peering partner. So you will slowly grow the list of prefixes.
Hmm.
But if you change a box in an old POP, then you already have too many prefixes. So you probably have to use the results of the prior calculations and apply them to the new box as you bring it on, right?
Yeah, you could actually do that. I mean, if you already have let's say that you have a location where you have an old router that you want to replace and you want to replace it with a switch instead, you could just enable serve for that old router and then you start gathering data and you could use that data to optimize the fib in the new switch. So that would be perfectly feasible.
So you can build the list of top prefixes even before you install the new switch in the new location.
Yeah, sure.
Hmm. Cool.
Do you publish this information anywhere? So have you got it on the internet or is it obviously kind of private at the moment? It might be interesting to share and maybe even like, you know, if you're at links, download like a best guess profile, you know, for maybe I'm a generic marketplace user or, you know, retail or whatever.
You mean this data I was talking about, like the amount of prefixes I'm getting, the ones that I'm installing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you could publish it per region or per IX and it, you know, and enable other users to start on a more optimized journey.
Yeah, I think I could do that. I mean, I don't see why I couldn't. Yeah, maybe I would do that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
You can send a check in the post. Thank you for that.
So you said previously that this thing is now in production.
Yes.
So you actually deployed Arista switches at different exchange points.
Yeah, we have this up and running at D6. We have it at Linx. And we are as well deploying this in AMP6 and Equinix Ashburn. Although these last two are not yet deployed. But by the time that the podcast is published, maybe they will, because I hope they will be deployed in a couple of weeks tops.
Very cool. Are there any videos where you give a run through of everything in operation, even maybe like, you know, basic setup, this is how I know it's working, just really kind of rudimentary stuff through to a working production system. You know, this is now their Linx SIR, and this is the information coming out of it. And I guess what I'm looking for is kind of entry level YouTube videos through kind of more advanced usage.
No, I mean, I don't have anything. If you go to the GitHub page of SIR, because this is completely open source, then you have a link to the documentation, and in the documentation there are like a couple of use cases, but it's mostly generic information. There is no actual walk through a real deployment. But no, I don't know. I mean, maybe I could prepare something. I mean, that would probably be interesting for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people see this and think, yeah, this is really interesting, but they ITIL comes and then they get scared and then they spend the money in something that they have someone to blame to if it fails.
Sure. So you just mentioned GitHub there as well. So, I mean, just for the listeners, what is a GitHub address?
It's github.com/dbarrosop. That's spelled as dbarrosop/sir.
Great.
SIRR. And that's the link to the project. And it's completely open, so feel free just to get it tested. I know that some people is already doing that with other vendors, actually. And yeah, I mean, it should be easy to write apps around it because it's just an API. So if you know how to consume an API, you know how to use SIR to write your own application. So it would be cool to see other applications coming. A lot of people has been mentioning that they wanted to have some sort of DDoS protection integrated with SIR. I think that it should be easy, actually, to build something like that. I mean, it has an API, and something that SIR has as well is it allows you to store data inside SIR. Because the idea is that, as I mentioned before, the idea is to have each box working standalone, but with a central brain kind of orchestrating everything and aggregating all the information. So SIR implements like an API where you can actually post information. So I was kind of picturing that you could integrate somehow a Snort or some other ideas with SIR that you can just post to that API, like, yeah, just black hole these destinations or this something. And SIR would kind of just install a prefix list with, I don't know, with an RPF check or something that would black hole traffic.
Or you could watch the historical trends, and if traffic from some prefix starts increasing dramatically, you push that to DDoS scrubbing or something.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is that I want to keep SIR as simple as possible and instead build applications around it. So everything is kind of easy to manage and troubleshoot. So yeah, I mean, you could do anything you want with Snort, for example, and then just post the data to SIR and then use SIR to steer traffic or to build the prefix list. I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of things that you could do.
So I guess just to underline that, then, you mentioned earlier on, you had a method that SIR emailed somebody you could pair with and maybe, you know, say, look, you know, you're open, can we exchange prefixes? How easy is those kind of extensions or plugins to write? Because, I mean, the idea that first sprung to mind there was if you see a delta coming in with which you've never previously experienced, you could actually get it to go off and do a load of lookups, figure out, you know, the origin AS and figure out what may or may not be on those IPs and actually email like a knock or email, you know, the support guy and say, this is abnormal. Are you expecting traffic from here? But I mean, how easy would it be to write an extension for that kind of thing?
I mean, it's just, the SIR is just an API. So if you're writing Python, for example, I mean, you don't even need to write Python. You could actually go just to open your browser and just go to the URL of the data that you want to go. For example, could be, I don't know, like router.london.spotify.com/SIR/get top prefixes. and then you get the top prefixes, and that's it. So, I mean, that's how you consume the data. It's just...
I understand. Yeah, an API. I overcomplicated it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why there were these kind of refactorings all the time, because I was trying to find the sweet spot for making it easy and kind of building the boundaries between the applications and the server. And I think that now we are at that point. I'm quite happy. I mentioned that solution before, that a colleague wrote this script to query the top AESs and mail if they had an open policy in PMDB. I mean, what you would call like a traditional network engineer. This is not that used to Python. He's starting now.
Sure.
And he was already able to do that. So.
Okay. Interesting stuff.
By the way, one more detail. When you deployed Sir at the exchange points, are you running it on Arista EOS, or did you deploy another VM to go with it?
No, I'm running everything inside EOS. The reason is because I wanted to save as much memory as possible. I didn't want to open a whole new operating system wasting memory. So I'm running everything inside the Linux inside EOS.
If it fits, why not? Saves you installing hardware, racking up servers.
Yeah, I mean, they have this, they have a packaging system already. It's called Swix, and that packages kind of the application and allows you to install it very easily. And it just works, and you don't need to waste a lot of memory in having to start another operating system, so why not?
Also, did you build a package that you can just install on the Arista VM?
Yeah, correct. I built this Swix package, so you can just use their own standard method to deploy extensions.
You just do install Seer, and it's there. Nice.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you do it. The cool thing is that they are already running Nginx and an application server for the API, so I'm just adding a few config files and reloading Nginx, so I don't even need to start an HTTP server or an application server because they already had one running.
Nice.
So the same server run serving EAPI is the one serving Sir, actually.
By the way, do you have that package available on GitHub?
Yeah, that's, if you go to the GitHub, you can go to the releases link and it's there.
Oh, yeah, I can see it. Nice. So I just take this and install it on Arista EOS and I'm done.
Yeah, I will probably work on the documentation tomorrow because I built the actual Swix package today. So I will probably work on the documentation tomorrow, and then in the documentation it will be explained how to deploy. But you just have to SCP the file and then you just say copy, flash, and then the Swix package to extensions, and then you say extension Sir, and that's it. Deploy it. You don't have to do anything else.
And that package includes PMAGGT.
Yeah, everything is included. So it's just, it's actually two packages. I wanted to keep it separate so it was easier for me to deploy new code. So there is one package with PMAGGT and another package with Sir. But anyway.
Right, so if Paolo updates anything in PMACCT, you can just update that one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to... I mean, if PMACCT... I mean, PMACCT is... I mean, it's very mature software, so it's not that... Like, there are releases every week, but...
No, not often, but Paolo does tend to update stuff every once in a while.
Yeah, but still, it's very mature, so it's not like he has to do that much nowadays. It's just mostly new features and stuff. But Sir is kind of in the early stages, so I expect that I will be doing releases in a weekly basis. So I wanted to have it separate so I could just update Sir without affecting PMAT.
Have you ever done a podcast with Paolo, Ivan?
Oh yeah, I did, of course.
Okay.
There is this podcast about this tool with unpronounceable name.
Right.
Yeah,
I might have been on that. I don't know. It's been too many by now.
No, we couldn't get you on. We wanted to talk about Netflix and we couldn't get you on because you were too busy or whatever.
And then we did them separately. Now I remember. Yeah,
yeah, and then we just did one on PMAGGT.
Good.
By the way, this also means that if I want to have NetFlow Collector running on an Arista switch, now in a few days, I'll just have a package that I can download from GitHub and install it, and I have PMHD on my box.
Yeah.
Huh, how cool is that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get why vendors don't allow you to do this more. I mean, it's just a Linux book. Just give me root access and let me do whatever I want.
Well, I think it comes down to the blame game, doesn't it, as always? If you break it, you own it. It's as simple as that, I think.
Yeah, that's the problem, because once people would start doing that and then opening support tickets for the things they actually broke themselves, that would be fun.
Yeah, no, it would be interesting to know how Arista is handling that, because, I mean, I'm not the exception. I mean, they give access to every customer. You just open your CLI session and type bash, and you are in the Linux shell. So it's not like you have to do something difficult to get access to the Linux shell.
Let's just say that they probably have fewer customers and more technologically savvy customers than some other vendors.
Yeah, maybe.
So I've just been looking at some of the source code whilst you've been talking as well, and it's nice to see you've even got nice comments in there on how to curl things across, which is, I think, missing from some projects that people are interested in. So that's really good to see.
So thank you, David, for this update. We already mentioned where the code is on GitHub, and I'll post the link in the show notes. So anyone who's interested in downloading this can just go there and download the code and start playing with it. And if I remember correctly, you said that this should work with any regular Internet Edge router, right?
Yeah. We are using this with Arista equipment to do this FIP optimization and peer in several POPs. And we are using this as well with Cisco devices. So, I mean, it's actually tested that it works with different vendors.
And now that Cisco has virtual aggregation in iOS XE, you can actually start using this to reduce the FIP table sizes on Cisco. Mm. Well, at least I remember reading something along those lines. Anyway, this was about SIR on Arista, so let's not go down that route. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
I don't tweet that much, but you can always contact me via Twitter or via mail. My Twitter handle is divarosop. Just send me an email or whatever.
Perfect. Thank you. Elisa, how can people find you?
Check out my website at bigwaveit.org or my contact is on there. There is a Twitter somewhere too, I forgot. we're all not so bloggy as you are.
But the website has definitely increased since I've last been there, although the background is still that sunset that I'm so jealous about.
I just have too many boat pictures.
So you're rotating them?
Well, this one is from years ago, but I remember exactly where this is.
That's good. And David, where can people find you?
So you can catch me on my blog, which is having a bit of a sleep at the moment, at ipengineer.net. And I'm on Twitter ranting like normal. And my handle is at, I forgot. I thought I was just about to say LSP42, and it's not, is it anymore? It's David John G.
So why did you change it?
I don't know. I kind of regret it now a little bit. I might have to go back.
LSP42 was so cool.
Yeah, I know. I think I might have made a bit of an error.
Yes, it was.
What did you do with it?
I don't know. I'm going to try and maybe reclaim it.
Okay.
Yeah. Before this goes live, I think.
Yeah, that's hard.
And for those of you who are new to the podcast, I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and I'm blogging at ipspace.net, where you'll also find all sorts of SDN-ish thingies, and the best place to start is sdn.ipspace.net. If you want to subscribe to this podcast, just go to podcast.ipspace.net and you'll get the list of all the possible feeds and other things I'm doing apart from this podcast. And if you liked it, why don't you go to iTunes and leave a review there, because we still don't have enough reviews. Finally, if you have any great ideas about things we should talk about on the podcast, there's the contact link on every page on my website. Click it. Send me a message. Tell me what we should be talking about. David, Elisa, Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you.
You too.
Thank you, Ivan. Bye.